Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, Chair of the Club's Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum and the Chair of this program. Today is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Carol Baggerly. I met her in, I think it was March or April of 2006, on a Sunday morning at a cancer conference. She came up to my poster on cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, vitamin D, and spent the entire 4 hours I was there at the poster just listening to what I had to say and listening to what the people had to say in the way of questions. She is a breast cancer treatment survivor who learned about vitamin D after her ordeal at the hands of our disease treatment system. She is also a retired successful businesswoman used to the role of developing companies to fill unmet needs of large corporations. After she learned in 2005 that vitamin D could have prevented her cancer and the ensuing ordeal, she set out to educate herself about this important but little heralded at the time natural substance. She and her husband, Leo, who just walked in, toured the country in the summer of 2006 in their motorhome, visiting the key vitamin D researchers in California, South Carolina, New York, Massachusetts, Ontario, Nebraska, and perhaps elsewhere, and soaking up information about their research and ideas and enlisting them as scientific advisors. As she had done in her business career, she kept looking for what was missing that she could contribute. She saw there's a large body of information on the benefits of vitamin D that was just not reaching the public, and that the government was not going to recommend vitamin D anytime soon. So she decided that her mission would be to educate the public on the benefits of vitamin D, is what Grassroots Health does through biennial workshops, through its vitamin D plus blood testing program, and through focus campaigns, starting with one in West Arkansas, and in the near future, we hope, one in the San Francisco Bay Area. So, Carol, it's yours.
Coordination is not one of my major attributes. I may press on the microphone when I really want to advance the slides. Is that okay? Before I get to the slides, I do want to tell you just a short snippet of the breast cancer. Bill said it right, but then he was coached. A breast cancer treatment survivor. Anybody in here had breast cancer? All right. Anybody in here know anybody who's had breast cancer? Almost the whole room, folks. That is really sad. That is really sad. I have one of my sons actually works at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. I have lots of contacts in the cancer field. So when I got breast cancer in 2005, which is when that was, it wasn't so much a matter of surprise. It was a matter of, oh, I know everybody can help me take care of this. Well, I had a mastectomy. I had a very large tumor, by the way. It was 5.5 centimeters. I mean, it really was not 5 millimeters, but 5 centimeters. All right, really big thing, tennis ball size. I had radiation until I bled on the table. I had chemotherapy. And anybody who's had chemo knows that what you end up doing is puking, crawling, walking, barely walking, and feeling like unmentionable words most of the time. And throughout that process, once upon a time I called my son, Keith, at MD Anderson, and I said, Keith, there's got to be a better way. And he said, Mom, it's the best we've got. And I said, like the proverbial mom, I mean, I have put on my mom shirt, all right? And it's not good enough. Now, it's not quite up to him to figure out the answer because he's a biostatistician, not a clinician, but that's okay. And for the next couple of years, I did nothing, day and night, but read cancer research to see, what's going on out here? Why do we have this treatment? I flatly don't believe in that kind of treatment, all right? I still don't, all right? And February of 2007, I'll never forget the date. It was February the 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. I went to see my doctor, and I got a standard DEXA scan, and I did all this standard bone stuff. And she says, Carol, you have osteoporosis. And I said, why? I work out every day. I do. I eat mostly right. And she said, well, maybe you have a vitamin D deficiency. And I said, what's that? And so, being my standard computer type self, I went home and I looked up vitamin D and osteoporosis, and I saw all kinds of research. And then I still apologize to absolutely everybody who's ever had cancer, because it took me 2 hours, 2 hours, before I keyed in vitamin D and cancer. And that very week, there had been published a paper by Dr. Cedric Garland of the University of California, San Diego, a paper saying that if you had higher levels of vitamin D, that you could possibly prevent about 50% of all breast cancer. I sat there at my terminal looking at that page, and I had goosebumps, just like I do right now. I remember it so well. And the next thing I knew, I had tears running down my face. It was just like, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. And I called up a friend of mine at the university. I said, you know this guy? Is he any good? Is he a flake? And she said, Bill knows Cedric very well. He's the world's best known epidemiologist in the field of cancer and vitamin D. And what this lady told me was, she says, oh no, he's a long way from being a flake. He's actually very discouraged. He's been writing about cancer and vitamin D for, get this, 30 years. And nobody's paying attention. Well, that was February of 07. It happened that in May of 07, there was a National Cancer Institute conference on vitamin D and cancer. And I got myself invited. I won't go through that story, but I got myself invited. And I went, and I sat for 2 solid days listening to over 100 researchers from around the world talk about what they knew about cancer and vitamin D. And at the end of that 2 days, the leader of the session, Dr. John Milner, who's in charge of the preventive medicine piece of NCI, says, where do we go from here? And he had a small panel of people that he pulled up to the front of the room, and all 5 of them said one word, and it started with an R. You don't get to answer. Anybody else want to say what that word was? Where do we go from here? Research! And I'm sitting there, probably the only non-researcher in the room, and my heart's going. It was just like, whatever. And then we had these most beautiful tables. NCI spends a lot of money on its auditoriums, folks, I want to tell you. They had these beautiful tables and these microphones that came up. And if you wanted to speak, all you had to do was press the button at the end of the microphone. Well, mine started pulsing. It had a little red light on it and just went like this. And I just took the plunge and I went, brrr, and I stood up. And I only had a couple of words. I really did, believe it or not. I said, where is your sense of urgency? That's it. And that is what I wish to convey to you this evening. It is still urgent. And the beauty of it, the literal beauty of it, the whole vitamin D message, is that solving the problem is so simple, so cheap, and so effective. And that's what I want to give you enough details on, so that when you walk out of here today, if you aren't a missionary to help spread the word, I will have failed. And I know you don't want to see me fail, do you?
No.
Okay. Cool. I know you want me to win, just like you. All right, the importance of vitamin D. This is just a quick economic picture done by Dr. Bill Grant right here. I love this picture. It says, here's the cost in billions of diseases from coronary heart disease, top left here, cancer, diabetes, flu, respiratory diseases, fractures, sepsis, and multiple sclerosis, and how much can you save? Please take a look just at the top two. $58 billion, $59 billion. Saving. Do you know at what cost? About a quarter a day, or maybe a nickel a day for people to take vitamin D. That's about it. Okay. course, there's this PR campaign like I do, but regardless, those don't cost a lot of money. At any rate, Bill commented here, his conservative estimate was a 20% reduction, and it depends upon how many people you get in it and what in the program, but that truly is, in my judgment, a conservative estimate. Here is a list of the actual diseases and their costs and the potential savings. And by the way, I would be very, very, very happy to share this PowerPoint with any of you, so don't worry with taking too many notes. Just let me know where to send it, and I will be happy to send it to you. So if you're only interested in money, there's a money issue, okay? You can do it. This one I want to show, and I have this in your folder for a reason. So if you don't mind right now, open up your folder and take this out because it's kind of hard to see, but it's one of the most important pieces of information I have to share with you. It's called I call it my DIP chart, the Disease Incidence Prevention Chart, all right? And what its purpose is to show you and everybody else how many diseases you can prevent if you have different serum levels. And a serum level is just another word of saying what's the blood measurement of vitamin D that you have in your body, all right? Across the top, that very top line there, it says serum 25-OHD in nanograms per milliliter, and that's what it's measured in. And across it goes 6, 8, 10, 12, all the way up to 58 on the far end. The reason you see those heavy black bars there on the very far end and back at about 40, that is the recommended range that we are recommending, and I'll come back to that in a minute. All right, but that's the serum level. Down here, this very bottom one on the far left, 99% of rickets, you've all heard of rickets, right? All right, is cured, solved, prevented by somebody having all of 20 nanograms per milliliter. Now, would you please tell me, where is rickets compared to every other disease? It's over here, right? It's way over here. And furthermore, what it takes to prevent rickets is about 400 international units of vitamin D a day. And that is what our current recommendation is based on. Is it good enough to prevent those others? You don't even have to read them. They're off the scale compared to what rickets is, all right? So part of the message is, oh my gosh, please look at the rest of this. Right here, 72% of falls. This number on experimental things that they've done, really clinical trials, they've gotten data that ranges everywhere from 20 to 80% of a fall reduction in elderly people by nothing more than vitamin D, folks. At every medical conference I've gone to, and I've gone to lots, so I go do lots of exhibits, there's almost always a fall prevention booth there. I go say, hi, how are you? What are you doing? Well, we do yoga, we do calisthenics, we clean the floors, all of which are good and necessary. And then, of course, I have to say, what do you do about vitamin D? And guess what they've said to date?
What's that?
Huh? Something like that. They don't even know. And yet, if you know anything about falls at all, if the person happens to be over 75 and they fall, the probability is they're going to be seriously injured and end up where? In the hospital, but where else? A rest home. And guess what happens within 5 years? They die. All right? They die because they can't take care of themselves. This is a crying shame. It is of an enormous cost to society. Cancer. This was a randomized controlled trial done by Joan Lappe up at Creighton University, and I'll tell you some more about this. And this is back again to that cancer, to vitamin D and calcium. They gave all of 1,100 international units of vitamin D, which is not very much at all, and they gave 1,200 milligrams of calcium. And you'll see on the chart that the calcium made a difference in cancer prevention as well. All right? But the combination, there was a 77% cancer incidence reduction at only 38 nanograms per milliliter. This is phenomenal, folks. All right? Type 1 diabetes. Every time I think of type 1 diabetes, I think of children. Because that's mostly of children. Because that's mostly who it hits. Although it's now actually starting to occur in later life. You can prevent it. In Finland, They gave several thousand IU. I don't remember if it was four. No, they actually had four higher. Yes? No, don't know. Two. All right, two. And they close to had no type 1 diabetes. And then they heard the United States was going to do 400 IU, and they said, shoot, let's do 400 IU like the United States. Guess what happened to their incidence of type 1 diabetes? It just went through the roof. And I just read a paper published last year sometime. Somebody was saying, you know, we're keeping track of this type 1 diabetes incidence in Finland, and we're going to have to keep track of it, and we're going to have to allocate money to keep track of it. That's what they said. They did not say, oh, my gosh, we need to figure out why it didn't happen before, and, oh, my gosh, does anybody else know anything about it? And there are lots of people that know something about it. But that one is a crying shame. All of them are. Yes. That is the end result of that study. The probability is that. Now, what happens to you, there's always that 23%, you know, and I can't control that. But yes, in essence, all right? The probability is very high that you would not have cancer.
Just a quick question about
sure.
Sure.
Yes. Yes, and I don't have that data with me. So after in our question and answer, if you want to ask Bill, I'll let him answer that. Yes. On that chart that's in your thing, every single one of those lines there has a reference. No. In your paper, in your handout, on the left side, down at the bottom, there are references for every one of those. Okay? Yes. Let me come back to that, may I please? Good question. All right. In San Francisco County, I wanted to say, okay, what's going on here? All right, let's look at falls. This is data from CDC's report and from a particular author who takes looking at this, a guy named Stevens. Currently, you have about 37,701 and a half people expected to fall annually. And these are just people that are older than 65. All right, this isn't little kids, this isn't middle age. The cost per fall, as calculated, is about $10,000. $10,000. And that's just the one-time cost. I mean, that doesn't include the 5 years in the nursing home. That doesn't include anything but the hospital stay and the fix it and get you to the next stage. The total cost each year is $397 million. The potential savings at 20%, not at 80%, not at 50%, is only $79 million. Do you realize what that would do to your economy if you didn't do anything with vitamin D to prevent falls? It's enormous. It's absolutely enormous. Now, as Bill mentioned, we went around and met people, but part of, with all of these problems, it's okay, what do you do about it? I am not a vitamin D researcher, although I sort of am now. I know a lot. But I wanted to find out what the experts had to say about what's the message. So as Bill mentioned, we traveled the United States and we met all of the researchers you see on these two pages to say, what's the message? What are you doing? Tell us about it. What do you want us to do to help get the message out? This is a whole enormous group of people from the different UC systems around the state. And these are other people, Boston University, Creighton University, Harvard School of Health, International Medical Center of Japan, McGill University in Canada, Roswell Park Cancer Institute. That one's unique because Donald Trump is actually the CEO and the president of a cancer institute. And guess what they look at there when you come in the door? What's your vitamin D level? Isn't that amazing? They actually pay attention to it. At any rate, we have met with all these people, and we stay in touch with all these people because they provide guidance for what Grassroots Health is doing with our D-Action study. And as Bill mentioned, or maybe Bill didn't mention, they had one single thing to say that was the same all throughout the country and the world, which is get the serum level. Screw the dosage. And I'll show you more about why that. The serum level needs to be between 40 and 60 nanograms per milliliter based on the information we have today. That doesn't mean it's not going to change tomorrow, but based on the information, and if you go back and look at that chart, you'll see that 60 is at the far edge, and when they're just, the lines don't extend beyond it. So based on the information we have today, that's what we are recommending. And if you happen to do nanomoles per liter instead of whatever, it's 100 to 150 nanomoles per liter. Well, yes, ma'am.
I don't know if you're going to address this further down.
I'm sure I am.
It's about any potential side effects of having too much vitamin D. And would you know that you have too much vitamin D because your level's past 60? Or when you decide, if you're below 60, could you still have any side effects from vitamin D toxicity?
Yes, I will address that. The end result of all of this is that there is a very significant deficiency epidemic, and if we truly dealt with it, we could have enormous reductions in these diseases in a relatively short period of time. Let me come back to falls a minute. You know how fast you can see the change in that? 12 weeks. 12 weeks. Got that? Anybody know anybody at a retirement home? Anybody know the manager of a retirement home? I'd love to talk to them. Because falls and the damage from falls are a cost to them. It is. It actually works in the muscles, as you can imagine. I mean, it's not a. It certainly helps with the calcium utilization in the bones, which is what people started taking it for to start with. And the recording of the fact that they were falling less was a curiosity, but it's a muscle thing. And actually, back again to muscles, I'll show you some more on that, but there was a Finnish rowing team, rowing muscles, all right? They decided we're going to have a contest. I'm going to give this group of female rowers vitamin D, and I'm not going to give this group. Guess which team won? Young ladies, college age. The vitamin D replete group won, just like you were telling us today about the Chicago Blackhawks finally won a game because they all had vitamin D, of course. All right. Where does this recommendation, you know, how does it fit? Does it come out of thin air? What's it with? I like this chart that Reinhold Veith and others have put together. By the way, about 80% of my slides come from other people. They make beautiful slides, and I get to assemble them and present them to you. Reinhold is up at Ontario at Mount Sinai University. Right now, on the very far left of that picture, you see a 32, that's 32 nanograms per ml, and you see a dark red bar or band there, and that says old world primates. And old world primates have serum levels kind of in the 40 to 60 range. That's where that sits on that bar. That next one, it says humans exposing full skinned surface to the sunshine's UVB like lifeguards. Their range is in the 40 to 60 range on that one. The next one, winter, 43 degrees north latitude. That happens to be in Toronto in Reinhold Veith's lab, right? This is what they call normal, and it's about 16 nanograms per ml. Look at the difference. Blood levels, when taking 1,000 IU a day, it goes up 6-8 nanograms per ml. And over on the right, the very last one, it says northern people taking 4,000 IU a day get up to maybe about 40. Okay? So that whole range of the 40 to 60 fits within, again, what we observe in animals, what we know about people who are exposed to the sun, which is where our original source of vitamin D was from. It's not from supplements. It's from that beautiful thing called the sun. Toxicity. This is out of a report. Reinhold Veith also has done a lot of reports or studies on toxicity, and some of his data is in this one. John Hathcock put this one together in 2007, and those kind of yellow dots there show toxic levels, and let's look at where they are. Nothing. There was no toxicity reported below 200 nanograms per ml. 200. And what are we recommending? 40 to 60, and I'll tell you something else now, and I'll show you later. It's hard to get up to 200. It's really hard. The other thing is there was no toxicity looking at an intake below 30,000 IU a day over months at a time. If you popped a 30,000 IU right this minute, it's a ho-hum. If you popped another one tomorrow, ho-hum. 6 months later, it might be a problem. But then again, it might not. All right? So the toxicity, as reported, primarily was hypercalcemia, which was too much calcium in the blood, all right, or hypercalciuria, which is too much calcium in the urine. Both are very easy measurements for doctors to do, and they do not come upon you quickly. They are something that takes time. And if you will regularly monitor your vitamin D level, and our recommendation, at least until you reach a stable point and know how your body works, is twice a year. All right? Twice a year shows you ups and downs. If you do it in the spring and in the fall, you'll see spring after the winter, how low did it get? And if you do it in the fall, you'll see how possibly good did it get after the summer and any supplements that you're taking. So you've got 2 points. And I'll show you some more data about that right here. Are you ready for this? What's happening in your town? This is zip codes 94,000 to 95, 96,000. Part of what Grassroots Health is doing is we're running a very, very, very large international study. By the way, you're all welcome to participate. People sign in and they fill out a health questionnaire on the web and they do a blood test twice a year for, we're encouraging them to sign up for 5 years. And in this zip code area, with the first test, there are only 194 in that sample set, but the reds are deficient and the greens are good. It's that simple. The deficient number is 48%. 48% of this population. Now, note that people that are going to sign up for this study, where do you think they sit on the scale of being healthy or not healthy? They're amongst the healthiest. You know they are. They're paying attention. They're doing this for a purpose. So I guarantee you we've got some of the healthiest people in San Francisco. The biggest age group, it kind of has a beautiful little normal curve at around the 40 to 50s. That's kind of where most of the age ranges are. It's people of all ages, right, right. We have a few people in their 80s or so, and we have some children as well. This is the first test. The second one, this is 6 months later. Please look at the difference in the distribution. Instead of 47-48% deficient, it's now 22. These people are paying attention. All right? And what did they do differently? Predominantly, they chose a different amount of their supplement in order to adjust. But we still have 22% deficient, but that's a 50% improvement. And look at it. Isn't it beautiful? I think it's beautiful. And this one. This is everybody. Not San Francisco. This is everybody. Note that the 47% deficient across the board, this number here is about, it says 3,700. We now have 8,000 people in the study, and it's holding pretty steady. All right? We still end up with the initial test being about half the people are less than 40 nanograms per milliliter. Right? Now, this whole group, again, the second test, they got down to only 24%, similar to San Francisco's 22, really close, don't you think? And we have third test data. Guess how much they did this time. Are you ready? Ta-dum! 10%. So it took this group of people 3 times to kind of reach a point where they knew what was happening, they could adjust their dosage, they could test again and see how well am I doing to get to that level. So that's kind of back again to why, you know, how frequently do you test? And, of course, we still want these people to keep testing. Yes, ma'am? First and the third is a year. First and the each person takes a test about every 6 months, plus or minus a day or a week or something. So between the first and the third test would have been 2 6-months. 2 6-months? A year. Okay? So we think this is pretty phenomenal. Yes? That means how many people are represented in this set of data? A lot more, 3,708. And this does not represent a time frame like it's quite likely as a matter the time of enrollment has spread over the last year and a half. All right, so those people that were ready for three tests certainly wasn't 3,708. That'd take us another year to catch up with them. Okay. All right. No, we actually have a significant contingent who use tanning parlors, tanning booths, in order to do that, and some outside people. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes. They certainly entered early on in the study. We're now a year and a half into the study, so there are actually some people now having their fourth test, but I don't have the charts on those yet. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Just to quickly highlight, there have been many controlled trials with vitamin D, and I need to update this because there are a lot more. I just wanted you to know we're not just talking about some take a look and see what's happening studies, but these have been randomized controlled trials with cancers, falls, neuromuscular function, blood pressure, influenza. Heard a really good one when I was in Belgium this last year on insulin resistance and vitamin D helping significantly reduce insulin resistance for anybody that's concerned about that. There's lots. There's every day full. By the way, how many people do Google from time to time? All right. If you're really interested in vitamin D and staying current, if you go to Google Alerts and say what I want from Google Alerts, and it's a free service you can sign up for, and just key in what you want them to look for as vitamin D, you will get something every single day. Some of it's kind of on the edge of being trashy, all right? But a lot of it is really great stuff. So I would encourage you to do that, to stay abreast of what's going on. This, I have several charts on breast cancer, many of which were prepared by Dr. Garland, and you see that grant name down there. This guy has been very important to me personally in helping me do things. This is just to show you one of the first things that they started looking at was latitude. If vitamin D, of course, is associated with the sun, in places that have more sun, do people have less breast cancer? That middle thing there is the equator. And on either side, you have the poles. And Dr. Garland calls this his smiley curve, and it's a pretty significant smiley curve. And he's done this for quite a number of different cancers. To show how extreme the difference is at different latitudes. This is the LAPI study. I refer to it as the LAPI study anyway. It's the randomized control trial that Joan LAPI and Robert Haney did up at Creighton University. And here I want to point out a couple of things for you. This, the white line is the placebo group. This is a group of, Bill, how many women were there? I don't remember, 1,200? 1,600. Remember how many people in the study? 1,800. Thank you, Dr. Baggerly. It's always nice to take your husband around because he knows things, right? 1,800 women. Three different groups. They had a placebo group. They had a calcium-only group, which is the red line, and then it had the calcium plus vitamin D group. For some reason, they didn't have an only vitamin D group, all right? But please take a look. Just easy visual. The red line, just calcium. Just calcium alone changed the risk of somebody's getting cancer. Isn't that amazing? That was a surprise to some people, but not to Dr. Garland. All right, by adding vitamin D, it changed it even more. And if you take a look at this, this is the start time of the study here at zero. The placebo curve pretty much has a straight line going straight down. If you take a look at the calcium and D, it almost matches that until about year 1.5, and then it takes off at a much less reduced slope, all right? So it says, whoa, I don't need to do this anymore. So it took a while for the vitamin D to take effect. So if you start on right this minute, a group of people in San Francisco, we're all going to take vitamin D to prevent cancer, you probably won't see many results. Doesn't mean it won't have an effect, but we won't be able to calculate much before a year and a half out. But there was a 60% risk reduction there at the endpoints down there. This is if you took out all the first-year people. And part of the reason for doing this is, you know, you enroll people in a study. They didn't have cancer to start with, but incipient cancer, like it's almost there. So if you took out everybody that was diagnosed with cancer in that first year, what do the curves look like? And they look a little cleaner, but the placebo goes straight down, calcium only goes down, and the calcium and vitamin D goes there. Yes, ma'am. Not to the best of my knowledge. However, and I don't think I have it here. Let me see. Hang on for half a second, and I won't come back to that question. All right? This is just some more different study on breast cancer incidence. Bill Grant was telling me today that there is some more data available now that kind of shows that this curve, certainly this one does, this one is by Lowe et al., goes straight down, but the more data from more studies kind of shows a slight flattening of the curve, like there is potentially a maximal serum level out there, but it's still a lot higher than the average population is. San Francisco and breast cancer. I wanted to show you that data, okay? Currently, you're running at about 130 plus or minus per 100,000 population of women. That means about over 200 cases a year. Cost per case, according to NCI, is $75,000. And again, that is not lifelong cost. All right? I guarantee you the cancer I had cost whoever paid for it, and thank goodness it wasn't me, more than $75,000. All right? So that's the average cost. And by the way, that number was 2008. I don't know what it is in 2010. All right? And if you just take that, how many cases, 200, multiplied, you get $15 million a year? And if you can save 20% of that, that's $3 million a year? Hey, guys. Yes?
This reminds me that there was a lot of discussion for a while, and maybe still, about the fact that the Bay Area seems to have a higher rate of
yes.
cancer, and especially in Berlin.
Yes. Very familiar with that. Alcohol is a major risk factor for cancer. It is. It's a dietary risk factor for all kinds of cancers. Yeah. It's not just breast cancer. Yeah. I did not. I don't know. Bill, do you know proportion? How much is an alcohol-related thing versus the vitamin D thing? But the vitamin D is everybody, okay? You don't get to separate that out. You like that? You can overcome the alcohol effect with vitamin D. Did anybody hear that? Vitamin D martinis. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes, ma'am. Very, 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 very. One more very? Sadly, not much. And the reason not much?
Age.
No, it's not age. What is it? No? It could be sun. Nah, nah. Where are you right now? Where are you right now? You are inside. Where are you most of the day? Inside. Where are San Diegans most of the day? Inside. All right. Yes, there is some geographic thing in the more southern latitudes. There is a lower incidence, but there is an astronomically high incidence no matter what. And it's not as glaring, except when you go to places like the equator or someplace where people still have some kind of sense of being with nature. However, there, Dr. Michael Hollick has also done some studies, and lo and behold, you go to some of these places in Africa or Iraq or whatever, and guess what the women are wearing? The burqas. So they're totally covered up.
So that's kind of confusing because you showed that slide earlier about the smiley curve.
Yes, yes.
How in the equatorial latitude
yes.
less cancer, but I come from the tropics myself,
right.
And I know that anybody who can't stays indoors.
Right.
It's
amazing how much difference a little bit of sun makes. And with our study that we are running right now, we have been amazed at the difference in measurements of people's serum levels in the spring, April-May timeframe, versus the fall, when these same people worked inside all the time, and yet they dropped, their serum level dropped a very significant amount, even though they took the same thing. So the sun seems to make a much bigger difference than we had thought that it did, even a little bit of it, which is good. Oh, I'm sorry.
Auto protect.
Okay.
How do I hit close? There we go.
I go to the computer. Yes, yes, yes. There we go. Of course. Well, I can't give you all I know in a one-hour lecture. I just can't do it. But yes, age matters. The older you get, the less ability you have to make vitamin D in your skin. All right? Exactly. And then also you have the issue of sunscreen. Lots and lots and lots of people use sunscreen where they didn't used to use sunscreen, and that's been a big, big factor as well. Thank you. I didn't mean to make fun of you, but it was just too good. Okay. Another analysis of breast cancer risk reduction. Type 1 diabetes, I've shown you this, 78% risk reduction with all of 2,000 international units a day. Aww. Falling, I've shown you before. This is just another study. This had a 50%, 49% reduction in falls. Also, they had calcium and vitamin D, by the way, all right? Neuromuscular function. This is back again to muscles, all right? These people, all right, whoops, excuse me. I didn't mean to go back quite so fast. They had measured on things like how well you could get up and out of a chair, all right? How easy it was for you to take steps, sit down. That's neuromuscular function. And if they had greater than 30 nanograms per ml on the far right there, their performance score was significantly higher than if it was less than 10. And that's muscles, right? So if you find people in your neighborhood wandering around and they happen to be a little bit older and you find them wobbling a little bit, run up to them really fast and say, I've got vitamin D for you. And then they'll look at you and go, huh? All right. Blood pressure. I like this one. It happened to me. We all like these personal stories, all right? I'd been on a blood pressure medicine for years. I started taking vitamin D, and all of a sudden my blood pressure was kind of low, and I wondered what was going on, and I thought, hot darn, maybe it's that vitamin D. So I don't take blood pressure medicine anymore. That's my story, not necessarily everybody's, okay? But it worked. Hypertension, same thing. Influenza. Bill's done a lot of work on this. This is actually kind of an old study. And there's more and more and more stuff coming out. There was just something that came out, a week or 2 weeks ago from Japan. They had a 50% lower incidence of infections, type A influenza, when they gave the children 1,200 IU of vitamin D. 50%! In the United States, the cost of a child being absent from school is the parents absent from work, all right? losing pay sometimes. And our ADAs, the average daily attendance of that school system, goes down. And guess what? They get less money. So it impacts one little bitty cold. It's enormous. Disease summary, disease list for very positive effects is probably more extensive than this, but breast cancer, type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, colon cancer, heart disease, falls, fractures, you name it, every day there's a new disease that really matters, right? And the some help list still includes prostate, aggressive prostate cancer, endometrial cancer, the lymphomas, and the lung cancer, and I'm sure the list goes on with other some helps. Lots of work is going on with brain development and cognition, Alzheimer's. Dr. Manuel Milan Fiala at UCLA has been working on vitamin D and guess what other substance? Curcumin. Curcumin. Curry powder. All right? And it matters. So all the people in India should not have Alzheimer's. Got it? All right? At any rate, infectious diseases is enormous. Dr. John Adams at Adams, not Adams, White, thank you, up at McGill works a lot on infectious diseases and finds that vitamin D has an enormous impact there, and Bill does that as well. Pain, autism, depression, mental illness, you name it, some researcher is looking at it now. The bottom line is vitamin D helps almost everything, so you might as well do something about it, and it might help whatever that other disease is. Basic message, get the serum level to 40 to 60. Where should your serum level be? Where should your serum level be? Louder, one more time. You got it, all right. What do you think your lab report might show and if it says the range is, the reference range? It says 20 to 100, or it might say 30 to 100. And that is just out of their whole population that they've measured. Here's what their values are. That really should not be construed as a recommendation. All right? So please, when you go see your doctor the next time, take that serum, that disease, that dip chart that I told you about and say, hey, here's this is. And help him or her get a little educated. This is a little more data from our study, and I want to show you this because it's really, really, really important to us. And I think to you as well. If you look at the vitamin D intake, we have people, you asked the toxicity question earlier, and we'll come back to that as well. We have people taking from 0 to 10,000 IU a day as represented on this chart, but we have people taking 50,000 IU a day regularly, and we actually have a couple of people, one, taking 100,000, and I don't know why. I mean, I do not know why. I do know the 50,000s are in a particular medical plan, and they are overseen by their doctor. But out of our total population now, our total population of about 8,000 deaths across the whole range, we have maybe four people that have been above 200 nanograms per ml. That's it. It just doesn't go there. What is happening here, it's clear if I didn't show you so much all at once, but this curve actually starts to flatten, all right? It does not go straight up in the air. Like the more you take, the higher it is. That's not how it seems to be working with the higher levels. If you stay down here, and it almost all the research studies to date have been at the 0 to 2,000 level, it is pretty much of a linear line. It goes straight up. But as you get up to the 4,000, 5,000 IU intake levels, it starts to level off, and that has a powerful impact on how much you should be taking, and I will come back to that and show you something else. But what I especially want to show you here is if you pick 2,000 IU a day, please look at what somebody's level might be, 18, it might be 110, and that is why when you say to me, how much should I take, I say, I don't know. I really don't know. I know somebody very close to me that takes 5,000 IU a day, and they got to 60. I know somebody else very close to me that takes 10,000 IU a day, and they got to 60. There's so much going on in one's body. generally, if you just start taking without a hyperloading dose, if you just started taking 5,000 IU a day daily, it takes about 3 months for it to kind of reach a plateau and level off. If you're really, really, really low, a lot of doctors will prescribe, as they should, kind of a hyperloading dose to get you up a little bit faster. The other thing, some people say, when can we do away with testing? I say we can do away with testing. All right, testing is expensive. We can do away with testing when we get the not the majority of the population, but almost everybody above 40 nanograms per milliliter. And what's that going to take? Hang on just a second. We've got 73% above 40 if I'm taking 4,000 IU a day. We get 83% with 5,000 IU a day. And we get 96% with 6,000 IU a day. Now, I'm happy to recommend or say or whatever that people can take this safely. All our data shows it is. Again, I'm not a doctor, and I'm definitely not a medical institution. All right? No institution is ready to make that kind of recommendation yet. All right? So that's why we're here, to helpfully educate you about what's going on and what choices that you can make in order to help yourself be healthier. Yes, you had a question.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We test them. We use them. But we also ran a very long, big test with a couple of other labs to see how well they correlated. Dr. Grant did the same thing with three labs, right? Really good. We do sell those, part of our study. We are running, by the way, a very unique study. I'm not a grants person. I'm a business person. All right, totally different mindsets as far as I'm concerned. And I wanted to get going. I wanted to get going now. And the way to get going now is to say, hey, here this is. And the way you pay for it is you pay for it. All right? We don't have any grants, even though we're a nonprofit organization. We are totally funded by each and every individual that chooses to participate in the study. It is a true grassroots study, right? We are starting some community projects, which you can read about in your little folder, where we're doing the same thing. And in the particular communities where we are, we will have still self-funding, but we will be accumulating money in that community so that there will be a fund for those that can't afford to participate in that way. I can tell anybody more about that after we go forward. I wanted to hit this to show you that dosage information from the study. When you're trying to go from 30 to 40, right, based on the data we have and that kind of curve that I was showing you, a try for your body might be 1,500 IU a day. If you're at 40 and want to get to 50, you probably need to take about 1,800 a day. If you're at 50 and want to get to 60, you probably need to take 2,300 a day. If you're at 60 and want to go to 70, you need to take 4,000 IU a day, because the amount of the increment per IU diminishes the higher you get. And we do not yet know what that really means. I mean, it's just like, oh, this is really interesting stuff. Yeah. We always recommend D3, and that's all we really talk about or study. D2 is ergocalciferol. D3 is cholecalciferol. As I was mentioning earlier, the D3 is what your body makes when you're out in the sun, so that's partly why we stick with it. The D2 you only get from sometimes some fortified foods, but most fortified foods have switched to D3, and or still there is a prescription form of D2 on the market that some doctors, when they want to prescribe 50,000 IU a week or something like that, that is D2. Yeah. Yes, yes. No. The calcium seems to be, based on my information, a pretty fixed, you know, if you're this old standard of if you're a woman over 50 or something, take 1,500 or milligrams a day, and that's it. You don't need to keep going up on that. Yes, ma'am.
Are there any other studies out there that show a relationship to
I haven't seen any studies. The magnesium issue, vitamin K issue, I mean, there are all sorts of other mineral vitamin relationships that exist, but they really haven't been studied very well yet. Yes, ma'am. Fish and fortified milk, but fish. All right, let's take fish. Fatty fish like salmon, you might get 400 to 450 IU in a serving of about 4 ounces. Now let's assume that you need at least 2,000 IU a day. That's 5 servings of fish a day, each and every day. Okay, we do not have natural food sources that are heavy enough in vitamin. Oh, whale blubber. I'm sorry, forgot that one. If you're eating whale blubber, you can get plenty. You can actually get toxic with it. Food is not a good source of vitamin D. Never has been, never will. It was meant to be the sun. I did a quick little test. Actually, it was kind of a long, painful test for me. I live in San Diego. Latitude, what, 32, 33? Somewhere in that. I am older rather than younger. We won't talk too much about that. What would it take for me to get enough vitamin D from the sunshine? By the way, the UVB from the sun is really almost only there between 10 and 2, right? Not early in the morning, not late at night. So it doesn't matter if you go for a walk at 5 every day. I'm glad for you to be outside walking. Doesn't help you much with the sun. Anyway, between 10 and 2, it would take Carol Baggerly 40 minutes a day, about 10 to 15 minutes a day with, and this was the hooker, 40% of my body exposed. I'm cold in San Diego. It ain't going to happen. 10 to 15 minutes a day, each and every day, naked. All right? I'm sorry. Yeah, to me it is. Hey, when it says on our questionnaire, what kind of clothing do you wear in summer? I check the box that says long sleeves and long pants. And it's not because I'm trying to protect myself from the sun. I'm just naturally cold. So it's like, eh. So it really does take a lot. All right. Measure your serum level, adjust it, and spread the word. And that, folks, is my thanks and welcome to the world of vitamin D. I want a special thank to Bill Grant for inviting me to have this opportunity to talk to you, to Robert Haney, who presented many of these slides that I have very graciously used, Dr. Garland, and mostly right now to all of you, because your spreading the word helps enormously. So thank you, and I will answer more questions.
Is there an age that is deemed safe? For example, young children, is there any contraindication for them? Couple questions.
Is there any contraindication for children for what?
How safe is it and how early is it?
How safe is vitamin D for children?
Yeah.
They need it desperately. The current recommendation from the American Academy of Pediatrics is now 400 IU, and some of our pediatricians say that's fine for about the first 6 months, and then they need to have about 1,000 IU a day. And quickly go to 2,000 IU a day minimum. But they need to have their serum level checked too. And all evidence indicates their serum level ought to be exactly that 40 to 60.
Okay, thank you. Also, the impact of sunscreen, does that block your intake of vitamin D?
Yes, it does.
And maybe you answered this, maybe you didn't. Does calcium make vitamin D more effective?
Yes, calcium makes vitamin D, I don't know that I would say it more effective, Bill. Vitamin D makes calcium more effective. I think I'd put it in that direction.
Well, there are 3 studies that show that taking calcium with the vitamin D increases your blood level of vitamin D for the same amount of vitamin D. Also,
great.
Taking vitamin D with your largest meal helps get more in the blood.
All right.
And do you want to mention the study by Bruce Hollis on pregnant and nursing women?
Oh, do I ever. Bruce Hollis and Carol Wagner just completed a randomized trial on about 700 pregnant and lactating women. And one of the things they discovered was that when they gave pregnant women, whom we're always afraid to do anything bad to, right? 6,400 IU of vitamin D a day. That's what it took, and they were safe, and they had not one single adverse event. And it worked. Oh. The end result of all that was that it reduced the comorbidities of pregnancy, like preeclampsia and preterm births, by 50%. All right? If you start looking at the dollars of that, they're absolutely enormous, because it's not just the one time I've got a preterm baby. That child very frequently has a lifetime term of various and sundry illnesses.
Plus, they reduced the risk of primary C-section, which is 99% of births in the United States.
Yes. Thank you, Bill.
Approximately how much does it cost to have your blood tested for vitamin D levels?
With our study, it costs you about $60 a test. And that's what it costs us in order to do the test and to do the data. There are still some insurance companies and or your health care may cover it, and they may not cover it at all, in which case, if you go do it, shop it on the market, it can range anything from $100 to $250. Yeah. This gentleman.
Do you need a doctor's note to get the test? I know I did a year ago. You don't?
Well, actually, in the state of California, there has to be a doctor's signature authorizing the test, but we have a doctor authorizing all the tests that we do, so that's all that's necessary. And we do that all over the world. Use the microphone on this, please. Thank you.
I was intrigued by what you were saying to this lady about her child, because from when I was reading up a lot on this,
you get to give the next talk.
Everything I was reading was talking about how this seems to be a real problem. Now, I don't know about pregnant women, but typically in middle age, when your body seems to be less able to manufacture vitamin D from sun exposure or from the food that you're eating, and that's where the necessity for the supplements seem to come in. At that age, that seemed to be much more of an issue.
I don't agree. I flat don't agree. The reason I don't agree, all right, is we know, and there are studies out there showing that if a child, a young girl between the ages of 9 and 15 have more sun exposure and or more vitamin D, they have a lower probability of getting breast cancer when they're 55, all right? And heaven only knows what other diseases they're likely to get. The same thing with dental caries. If an infant has more vitamin D, they are less likely by the age of anywhere from 2 to 11 to have dental caries. No, it's not middle age. You need it immediately.
Not that you don't need it, but my point was that it seems that it's when you're in your middle age that you're less able to manufacture enough vitamin D, that when you're younger, it seems like you're able to get it just from natural sources.
That's not the case. That's not the case. Children are very deficient, very deficient. Yeah, it comes from outside sources. Yeah. Right. Bill's got a... Yes, sir. Excuse me.
In your research, have you come across any reasons why someone could be taking a supplement and still not get their serum level up to our 40-60 range?
Getting the serum level up, there are several reasons that are really basic, okay? Believe it or not, there actually is a difference in supplements. All right? Some supplements really do not carry the IUs that they say they do. So that's probably not probability number one, but it's not small. Number two is vitamin A. We have an enormous number of people in our study when they write us and they say, but Carol, I'm taking 5,000 IU a day and my serum level didn't go up at all. We now write back and we say, how much vitamin A are you taking? And I would guess 80% of them are taking 10,000 or more IU of vitamin A a day, and we say stop. And all of a sudden, the serum level goes up. The vitamin A and the vitamin D use the same receptors, all right? So they are in conflict with one another. So vitamin A is one. The other one is prednisone or any corticosteroids, pain relief medicine. Those are real killers to your vitamin D, and if you're taking any of that, you probably need to take at least twice as much vitamin D as others, but those are some of the most common ones.
There's one other reason, too. There's genetic differences in the processing of vitamin D.
Sure.
There's a new paper just came out very recently that shows making it from the sun, putting through the intestines, putting through the kidney, the liver, and so on, there are genetic differences.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
If a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, can taking vitamin D help to prevent reoccurrences?
We hope so. Thank you for bringing that up again. I meant to mention that. Pamela Goodwin from Mount Sinai up in Canada did a study. I don't remember how many women were in the study, but on year one, she just measured their vitamin D level when they were diagnosed with breast cancer. 12 years later, she went back and said, how are you doing? All right. Those that had higher than 30 nanograms per ml were 50% less likely to have had a recurrence. So my judgment is, hey, that's all the proof I need to make sure I don't have a recurrence. Thank you very much, or at least to help me with that.
Well, I had two questions, but now you brought up something and I have three. So how much vitamin A would be okay? The only vitamin A I'm taking is from my...
I don't think I'm qualified to answer that. Bill? 1,500 okay. IU a day?
All right,
thanks.
My questions were, I was going to ask you about the supplements, and I know you probably don't want to mention a special brand, but is there something... I know that there are vitamins and there are vitamins. I mean, is there something we need to look for other than it being D3?
No, I really don't. I don't believe so. I really don't, or I would tell you.
Like a good source to get them or anything.
Yeah. Okay. I would stick with name brands. I mean, I'm at this point in time until they put some serious tests on what's in the supplements and how they do. I think that's your safest bet. Just stick with a name brand.
And the other thing I'd like to know is, you know, does it look like the medical community is coming on board with this? Because I know I was recently told that I'm low at 25 and that she thinks I should be at 30. And I'm taking 2,000. She told me to take 2,000 a day, and then after I started reading a little bit, I've kind of keep inching it up. But is the medical community, you know, getting the message?
Hey, they come to our seminars, all right? We do seminars twice a year for healthcare professionals, and they fly in from all over the world. So, but you know why they're coming in? They're coming in because you came in the door and you said, hey, doc, what do I take? And he says, I don't know, but I'll go find out. So you're making them get there.
All right. Our thanks to Carol Baggerly for her comments here today. We also thank our audiences here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 107th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.